You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Keith
Johnson. From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz at the Movies.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. Bing is for doing, and we are here doing AfterBuzz at the Movie for the 2013 Neil Blomkamp movie, Elysium. This will be spoiler. A lot of spoilers, but this is not going to be a review. We're going to have a thorough breakdown of this awesome 2013 sci-fi movie.
I am your host,
Marissa Serafini, and joining me, I have...
Dimitri Panos, hello, how are you?
Excellent. And running the ones and twos, our awesome executive producer...
Hello, everybody. Phil Svitek here. Excited to be here.
Yes. Excellent. This film, it was nice, action-packed, a lot of social undertones and social classes. What were your overall thoughts of this movie?
Well, I'll start off. First off, I'll just say, Neil Blomkamp is coming off of District 9. Really big movie for him. You know, personally, I wasn't necessarily on the District 9 bandwagon. I got it. I understood why a lot of people got it. You know, to me, Neil is a fantastic director. I think his shortfall is writing. I had some issues with District 9 and Elysium, even more so. First and foremost, like, Elysium is a science fiction movie, but it's also a very highly charged message movie. It has everything from immigration issues to healthcare issues and a little bit of Occupy Wall Street type of issues, the have and have nots. And I think because they hammer those messages home so much, I think that the movie itself sacrifices character development and plotting in order to get this message across. So for me, there were things that I did enjoy. The direction was fine. Special effects were great. Editing was fine. Performances solid across the board. But that movie, it just lacked in a lot of story and plotting and character development. There was a lot of things I didn't quite understand why people were doing what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And, so for me, the best I can say about it is it didn't make me angry.
Okay. I agree with you that I feel the storyline and the characters were underdeveloped because they relied so much on the visual effects and just the overall look of the two atmospheres that we're dealing with, Elysium.
Right.
And Earth, the two differences. And I think because they relied on so much of the visual effects that everything else kind of just fell away.
Yeah, sort of. And the other thing, too, to me is Neil Blomkamp seems to be he's spearheading a new science fiction genre, which we can call third world sci-fi. Mm-hmm. L.A., or as I called it shortly after seeing the movie, T.A. It's not what you think. I just called it Tijuana Angeles. It looked very much like what we saw in District 9. In fact, I was expecting one of those mant creatures to pop up and say, hey, hello. Yeah, Phil, what are your thoughts?
I overall liked it. For me, what was interesting was the fact of as soon as I got into it, I was really nervous that this is something that we've seen before about colonization and things like that and trying to get there. We've seen it with Blade Runner. We've certainly seen it with what's the other Philip K. Dick movie that was just recently remade?
Total Recall.
There you go. So I was a little nervous right from the get-go about that. Is it just going to hit the same beats? But it was different. Initially, too, I thought it was going to be kind of smaller scale where everything's just kind of contained in this rubble. And, you know, we had some shots of Elysium, things like that. But I was like, is there going to be any action? Is this going to be just a quick movie? Yeah. You know, because it only runs pretty much at around like an hour and 40.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, I thought it was going to be very self-contained and small, but it got big.
And, you think?
I think by the end it did.
Interesting.
The third act was a lot of action.
Yeah. So. I mean, for me, it was small. I mean, first off, let's talk a little bit about the plot, which is Earth – has just gone to pot due to pollution, overpopulation, whatever. The highly rich, disease-ridden, the highly rich build this wheel in the sky that keeps on turning called Elysium. They're the only ones who live there. And the have-nots are on Earth, and they look up into the heavens, and I mean that literally, they look up into the heavens. They're constantly reminded that, you know, that the 1% is up there living life. And to me, for this movie, it wasn't global. Like, we only focused on the Los Angeles area. We didn't know how any other major city, country was affected. We didn't know anything about politics. We didn't know, did government completely collapse and fold? Like, what's going on? Like, it was, again, because I think of the message of immigration and such. It just focused on this. And to your point, too, with Elysium, you know, you got this beautiful paradise, but I never got a sense of the society. What do people do there outside of sunbathing and whatever? Obviously, there's some semblance of an economy, but we don't see people working. We don't know. We know that there's a government in place, but who really runs this place? I felt that the movie was small compared to other movies. We can even go as recently far back as our first movie.
Let's talk about Neil.
Sure.
Only because I think, you know, that's a great – it's his movie. He wrote and directed it.
Sure.
You know, and so I don't think you can talk about the movie without talking about his history.
Absolutely.
How much do you guys really know about him as a human?
As a human being, I've never met him. He owes me money, though.
Does he? I bet he does.
I know that Neil, he specializes in visual effects, and that's how he conceptualized Elysium. He didn't really write a set script per se, that he sent a bunch of like 60 to 70 images of concept art that he drew out and he gave to Uito Digital Studios. And so from those concept developments, then the story came along. So I can understand why the characters and storyline kind of fell through, because he focused so much on the visual aspect of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, he is a known, believe it or not, he's a big Michael Bay fan. And he tries to, and you can notice a little bit of that. And I got no problem with that. And he is a solid director. I think that writing-wise, what he brought to the table in this movie, it really lacked to me. I mean, Phil, like you...
Well, he grew up in South Africa, so he's certainly no stranger to apartheid and things like that. Yeah, I mean, granted,
District 9.
He's only 33 years old, so he's fairly young. And I don't know. It just seems as aware of the world as he is, he seems also unaware of it. I don't know. And that may be an ignorant statement, but I think he's bringing to light sort of these opinions. But he never makes any conclusions about them.
Yeah, agreed. This is his second feature film. So, again, he is a bit inexperienced in the directing aspect. So he might – again, he's learning. He's bringing amazing films. But still, he still has to work on concept development of characters and storyline.
I mean, direction, I think – I actually think, like, I like his direction. I like his vision. I like the way he makes things look. But, yeah, to your point – you know, I think when you go down character breakdown and everything, we don't know. Again, I was going to use the example of a recent movie, like Pacific Rim. It's not as message heavy as this movie, obviously. It's a different science fiction movie. I understand that. However, you did get the sense that what was going on in Pacific Rim was global. I mean, it affected globally
so many people.
Everything that was going on. I'll even go back and say Avatar. You know, when you were in the world of Pandora, which was completely, completely made up by James Cameron, another message movie, but you completely got a global sense of Pandora and how what was happening there affected all the regions of Pandora.
Well, it's a good example of Avatar. I mean, the guy spent, 15 years about writing this movie?
True.
And also, part of the reason why he did that was he waited for the specifics.
Technology and come up.
You know, when you spend that much time kind of thinking about this one thing, you're much more apt to succeed. It's true, you know. And so with Neil, I think he's very good at identifying all these different things, right?
Sure.
How many times have we seen movies about technology and, like, and kind of robotics synchronization of our bodies and things like that? And so, you know, he's hitting the right points and he's wondering, he's asking the right questions. But I think, you know, it would have been interesting. Could be, I think, following the successes of District 9, I think people tend to give directors kind of leeway. And especially with the story. So I think they could have helped him out with the story, especially if, you know, he's such a great visual director. Just have someone come in and say, hey, you know, here's how you got to hit beat by beat.
Sure.
And it's interesting, you know, real quick, I kind of want to touch upon this. I was at Barnes & Noble, and there was a District 9, or not a District 9, Elysium book already on the artwork.
Oh, okay.
You know, and this, and I was looking at it, and I was very fascinated by the fact, okay, this movie has barely come out.
Yeah.
And you know, if I wanted to, I could know the whole backstory and kind of know the world. And so, but, you know, it's interesting how, okay, I don't want that to be a crutch. I didn't look at it specifically. And I don't think, you know, fans should kind of look at a book to understand the world of a movie.
I understand. Yeah, oh, yeah, I get it.
It's not supposed to be the definition.
Yeah. I agree.
And let's quickly talk about the two worlds in this movie. We have Elysium, this new world type of, not really a planet, it's more like a space station.
Yeah, it's a space station. Sure.
That inhabits all the rich and wealthy people who have fled Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They live there and they have these, what they look like, tanning beds that can heal any human disease.
Any human disease.
So I thought the overall look for Elysium was really, they showed that it was a really clean and sterile environment, completely a place of happiness.
Oh, yeah.
A place where you want to flee to.
Well, that's what Elysium...
Paradise. It was utopia.
Yeah, and that's what Elysium means. You know, it's based off a Greek word, and essentially it's where gods go to die. And it is a place. It's a paradise. Mm-hmm. And that's what they built up in Elysium. And, yeah, it's lush, green, beautiful water. And nobody can ever get sick. You know, and again, when we talk about, like, the haves and the have-nots, I mean, to me... again, it's just when we look at certain things, especially because it was so LA-centric, you know, number one, you know, I have to wonder, like, what does, you know, what does a Latin American person think of this movie? Because it's sort of kind of stereotypical if you break it down when you look at it. Because basically when we opened up the movie, I mean, LA is Mexicans. It's basically a lot of Latin Americans.
It's a lot of the third world countries that can't afford health care.
But it was, yeah, it's a lot, but they were speaking Spanish. There is very,
yes,
and what happens to LA? It looks like Tijuana.
It's overpopulated.
It's overpopulated, shanty towns, and, you know, it was very, a lot of like cholos around, and some people work, some people don't work. And to me, I'm like going, okay, that's fine, but what are you saying about Los Angeles? What are you saying about that sort of, like, geez, when they come into town, like, it looks like this? Mm-hmm. And then on Elysium, like, you don't, you know, there have to be some semblance of an affluent Latin American person to go up there, but I didn't see but a one. So I thought that was an odd, interesting choice. And then to take the immigration thing a step further, there was this whole immigration story about you're a citizen. If you're not a citizen, you're not allowed up here. It wasn't even a tax bracket. It just said you're either a citizen. And there's one scene in the movie that really just stood out for me. It's, again, to refresh everybody's memory, Matt Damon, he's a worker, and he gets irradiated at his job, lethal dose of radiation, and he wants to go to Elysium. Always has since he's a kid, but now he really needs to go. He's got 5 days to live. He's given the opportunity to do it so long as he comes back into the fold with his, I don't even know what spider is, but he is the head of the underground, so to speak. He can get you a passport to Elysium, an illegal passport, and he asks him to do this one job, and that's hijack the brain. This is a Philip K. Dick story. Hijack the brain and memories of a rich person who would have the keys to unlock the codes to Elysium. So they go forth. They do this. He has all this information in his head. He eventually gets to Elysium. They plug him in to do the codes. And what's the one thing that you saw that pops up on the big computer screen? Citizens, illegal. I mean, illegal was like the clear word.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it gets backspaced out and then it's citizens legal. So the immigration message in this movie, I mean, it starts off with an immigration thing. You know, It's so hammered into our heads, and I think there's even an immigration law that's going to be coming up in September or November coming up. So, yeah, to me, when you look at the haves and have-nots and what was done, you know, I got the message. I just wanted a little more character development from Matt Damon. Yeah. Like, seriously, in the beginning of the movie, he meets the sweet girl, Frey.
Yes, and speaking of Matt and the character, right? Let's talk about the cast members.
Sure.
Matt Damon, he's the protagonist in the movie. What were your overall thoughts?
Hey, look, I had no problem with the performances in the movie whatsoever. I thought he was really good. Again, and the woman that played Frey, Alice Braga, I believe.
Yes,
she was really good too. And you know, the performances are great. Again, I just wanted you meet them as little kids.
Mm-hmm.
He promises
so
to her.
They already have this.
Yep.
Lasting bond together.
Absolutely, as little kids, and he promises her.
Promise to.
I'm
going to
take it
or leave
him. As the looking up to the heavens, and you know, then they go apart. They grew up.
Separated.
Their own tracks.
Their own way.
Yep. And you find out that Matt Damon, he became a car thief. He was in with this spider guy and his group or gang. It wasn't so good because he was caught. He's, you know, when we see him, he's got the ankle bracelet on. He's on probation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just trying to get through life without, you know, just get through
and
life.
And develops somewhat of an attitude toward authority figures, even the robots that are on Earth kind of controlling the Earth citizens. He's very condescending to them, even though they're not human beings.
Right.
He has this overall hatred, should say, towards
technology,
technology, towards anything that can control him or even to the Elysium citizens.
Yeah, and he's got a meaningless job because, describe to me what he did. He put rivets into a...
Just like a Total Recall.
Yeah, he put rivets into a thing that gets irradiated, pretty much, but that's all he did.
But it shows that even the citizens on Earth are making these robots for people, for the Elysium.
Well, you know, in terms of the look of Elysium versus the Earth, what was also interesting is every time you were on Elysium, the shots themselves were composed on much more mechanical things, right? So you had dollies, you had jibs, it was smooth, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
On Earth, it was chaotic, it was handheld and everything like that. And only later does chaos get introduced when the illegals, so to speak, come in. you know, and it's true, and that's how kind of, in terms of cinematography, that's how it was designed to be, you know, and that's how they represented even more so than the actual, like, set pieces, the visual aspect of it.
Oh, yeah.
And the feelings, too.
There was a dichotomy between Earth and what was going, you know, what's here, and it truly was better up there.
Mm-hmm.
But when Frey and Matt and Max get back together again, some years have passed. But certain things happen that I sort of kind of wanted to, like, if we had a little bit more background, like, Max is in an orphanage at the beginning, Frey's in an orphanage, they obviously had parents, and what's going on, there wasn't much backstory to either one of them that, when we get to a key scene in the movie, when Max is talking to this girl, which ends up being Frey's daughter, Matilda, we don't even really know. Could we guess that Matilda was maybe Max's daughter that he didn't know about? Or who was she? Like, we didn't know
anything about these people. Yeah, we didn't get anything about the father of Matilda. But it goes to show that even though these Max and Frey have separated, they still have something in common. They both have to go to Elysium. At first, they wanted to just go there and live there and have better lives, but now is that they have to go there.
They have to go there.
There's no option because her daughter's dying and
she has
Max
leukemia. Max is dying, the daughter's dying. But there's a scene when, you know, Max is in the house and the daughter, just out of nowhere, starts reading to him and he actually stops and listens to her. And it sort of kind of, for me anyways, it came out of nowhere because there was no tie between him and Matilda. There was no, like, nothing at all. And again, getting to Elysium, we knew Max's reason to get to Elysium, and we knew that once we found out that there was a sick girl, it telegraphed well ahead that there was some way that they needed to get to Elysium. And I even thought the way that they got Frey and Matilda into Elysium was sort of kind of a cheat, because when this Kruger character, who's like the most non-secret agent going on. When he comes to the house to question him, he sits there and he just decides to take him for the ride. He doesn't use him as leverage. He doesn't say, hey, Max, I'm going to blow this little girl's head off. He just says, you're coming with us. No reason, not whatsoever. It's not within his character, but for plot convenience,
they had to keep the story going
to go to Elysium.
And speaking of Kruger, Charlton Copley, yeah, he was also in District 9.
Absolutely,
he ultimately ended up being the big baddie in this movie.
Absolutely.
I thought it was going to be Jodie Foster's character was the person that we're going to be fighting against, but it's actually Kruger.
Yeah,
and I liked his character. I thought he was interesting. He kind of played the special force mercenary guy who lived behind the lines.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about his character is that even though he's kind of associated with Elysium citizens and kind of treated as such, Elysium citizens still went against him.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's psychotic. And, like, you understand why. You know, again, one of my things about the movie is, like, at the beginning when those three shuttles go off to Elysium, Jodie Foster calls this guy up to shoot down three ships. Like, I was like going, wait a minute, does Elysium not have their own defense system? Like, they have to call a guy on Earth to take out this wicked cool gun, don't get me wrong, and to blow these ships out of space from Earth. Again, that didn't make sense to me. And he was supposed to be a secret agent, yet we find out when Jodie Foster is brought to the committee, he's not so secret. Like, everybody knows that this guy's on Earth. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, what is he? He's a baddie. But, you know, again, I think he could have made a drinking game for, you know, every time he said, what was his catchphrase? He said it like a mazillion, like, what do you think about that? Or he was so bad. Like, he truly was, like, the villain as opposed to, you know, we're
he was
going
mentally
to
and physically someone that you
well,
had to fight against.
Oh, yeah. And he was crazy. He was, like, Bane crazy. Like, he could take – he took people down without mercy. And it was a violent movie, more violent than District 9. Wouldn't you agree, Phil?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would sort of agree. You know, and also the interesting comparison between this and District 9 is District 9, you had – it was much more documentary-esque where you had interviews.
True.
You know, and I'm glad this kind of went above that and did it just kind of naturally. You know, just told the story the way that it progressed.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, I agree with that. You know, and I liked – but I will say I liked him better in District 9. You know, in this movie, he was just a baddie. He was just a really bad, off the page, just a bad guy, and you just knew he was the bad guy. And we should talk about Jodie Foster a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know her.
I do. It was, it's
always
great.
I thought her character was interesting. Honestly, Jodie Foster's characters in all the movies that she portrays, she's either hit or miss with me. I like her in some, and I don't like her in some. This movie, I really didn't care for her character, maybe because she was just a sociopath a bit and making all these commands to kill these immigrants with no emotional feelings afterwards. And I think her accent of the character kind of threw me off. It definitely distinguished the fact that she's completely Elysium citizen.
Right.
She has no ties to Earth whatsoever.
Yeah, and I think the accent, again, my thing, I think the accent too was to punctuate that she's a bad guy. You know, to your point regarding the character of Delacorte, you know, she was set up to be the bad, you know, she was set up to be the villain. And again, there's no motivation. Like, I never got a sense of why she was the way she was. And normally, I guess, you can sort of kind of go with it. But there was one scene in particular that sort of kind of threw that out the window for me. And that's the scene where she's brought to the committee and they're sort of kind of dressing her down for blowing up the immigration transport ships. And the president is pegging her down a few notches, and then she takes the president to task and she asks him this question and he can't quite answer. And then she goes, you can't answer that question because you don't have kids. You don't know what it's like to raise kids and stuff like that. So that throwaway line to me was like, well, so far in the movie, I haven't seen you being a motherly mother. I don't know that you have a family.
Well, she did remember they're doing the party or whatever, and she's giving gifts away to kids. So
yeah,
even if she doesn't, I think there's something about her that...
Can't say. Yeah, I understand at the party, but I don't know who these kids are. And if you're going to have a line like that, show me something that maybe you don't see her with a family, no husband, no kids. Like, or show me something of her family life where maybe her husband was killed by an immigrant. Maybe that's why she has such hatred towards them. Or maybe her kids are so sick. Like, do something that's motivational for this character to be as bad as she is. Other than just scowling, and she has the French accent, and
well, I don't think it's
around.
So much as bad as just someone who would scorn, really, because she gets reprimanded by people who are above her.
Right.
Therefore, she calls John Carlyle to get the codes, the access codes, to restart Elysium all over again, so she can be recoded to be the leader.
The leader, yeah.
So and it's not so much that she wants to kill people; she's just in it for herself.
Yeah, and I get that. Again, where's the motivation to do that? Like, why does she hate? Like, I understand she's a one percenter, and because she has money, she should be evil. And because she's French, apparently, she should be evil. But I'm just trying to figure it. Like, again, I was just looking for a little bit motivation from that character to be doing these things. And again, when she blew those transport ships out of the sky or out of the water, you could say, I was wondering, like, I never got the sense that this hadn't been done before. Like, they had this guy on ground, and maybe this had happened before, and, Carlyle or Kruger. And again, what were the deportation processes on Elysium? Because obviously there was a deportation center. We see it, but we don't.
They just shipped them back.
They just shipped them back, but again, how many times do ships go, and are they only coming from... You know, Tijuana, Angeles, are they coming from Paris or New York? Or, like, what? I had no sense of what the system was up in Elysium. And that, to me, it sort of bothered me.
Yeah, and it made me question, because we only saw three ships from Los Angeles.
Right.
And it doesn't cover all the world.
The world.
It makes me wonder, how many ships did they actually shoot down?
Yeah.
And
or
how
attempted.
Many citizens really did die?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, you know... I know we're bashing a little bit of the movie.
Well, we could talk about.
Let me ask this: you know, oftentimes you hear, that studios want to shorten the movie,
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I felt this movie needed to be a little bit longer.
I felt the same way.
If anything, and especially for a summer movie, like. I know John, it's actually good that we don't have John Comerford here because he always likes his movie very short and to the point, so he might actually love this movie.
He might.
But for me, you know, especially with summer blockbuster, I'm looking at it like, okay, well, if I'm going to pay money, then make it 3.5 hours long. You know, I'm going to enjoy every moment of it.
I agree with you.
With all the visual effects and whatnot, you kind of want more. You want to see more of that. So let's talk a little bit about the visual effects that happen.
Yeah, but to point just for 1 second, I don't mind a long movie, so long as it's good. Like, you know, you can have a 2.5 hour, 3 hour movie, so long as it's good and it has me enthralled and right there.
Keeps your attention.
I've been to 90-minute movies that have felt like 4 hours. So, you know, it
being
short, yeah, right? I think we all have. Anybody who goes to the movies, there have been short movies that, God, when is this thing going to... I thought this was only 90 minutes. So I agree. It, to me, or you'll rarely hear me say it, but it could have been padded. It could have been a little bit longer. I could have gotten to know these people a little bit better, and I probably would have liked the movie a little bit more. So, and now, yeah, we can talk about the technical aspect, which I enjoyed. I liked the technical aspect of the movie, so...
I think visually it was stunning.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to live on Elysium.
Yeah.
And I think the interesting is that you had these people who were dressed straight, like, and I noticed the clothing, they were very, like, gray, metallic, kind of monochromatic colors.
Yeah.
But clean.
Very clean.
And whereas the.
Almost septic.
Yeah. Whereas the earthly beings. Their shirts were, like, brown and raggedy. It was more cotton compared to cashmere.
Absolutely.
Cotton compared to cashmere. And I think it definitely showed the difference between these two people.
It's the have and have nots.
Yeah.
Did anybody have the option or the opportunity, I should say, to see it in, like, IMAX? Like, good IMAX?
I did not.
70mm? It looked beautiful. I mean, you know, at least at the very least, you know, I saw, you know, a great presentation of, in my opinion, a mediocre movie. but it looked great. The opening shot of Elysium, I think we can agree. Mm-hmm. Like, that was just like, wow, that looked great. His special effects were good. And even for a short movie, too, I thought his pacing. I mean, there wasn't a time I was bored. Like, in the movie, I was, like, the action kept moving. Not Johnny Damon, the Red Sox, I'm thinking. Matt Damon. That's funny. He, right from the get-go, we know he wants to get to Elysium, and he gets irradiated, and boom, he's got to go. I like that. There was a time limit. I had 5 days to get better, to get into a med bed. So the editing, I thought, was really solid. The camera work I thought was solid, and it looked the special effects. All the money was up on screen, I will say.
Here's what to the story aspect of it, I will give him credit that at first I didn't know, we kind of in terms of the pacing, right? So it was a very good pace early mm-hmm. on, and I didn't know exactly how all these different things were going to connect, and eventually it made sense. So I will credit him on mm-hmm. that. Now, again, you guys might disagree how successful that was, but at least, It was kind of, we saw different portions of things, and we moved back in time and space and whatnot, and kind of got going.
Yeah, no, he put it together in very simplistic ways. I agree with you, and he kept it going. Like, there wasn't, we can pick apart various plot points, but he did keep it going in a very simplistic way. I'm going to say, when we talk about it being longer, I was thinking, I looked at my watch, and I knowing the movie was a little over 90 minutes. I looked at my watch, it's about an hour in, and I was like, we're not at Elysium yet.
Yeah.
Like, when are we going to get to Elysium? Like, this movie's going to have to hurry up because we know that it ends there. So that was weird for me that it took them a little while longer to get to Elysium than I thought originally. Did anybody else feel the same way about that?
I thought it was interesting how they spent so much time on this task that Spider sent Max to go get the codes that he needed from Carlisle. I thought they spent a lot of time on that storyline. Mm-hmm.
Very Neuromancer, William mm-hmm. Gibson-esque as well.
Somewhat of a shootout.
Yeah.
And then, like, a bunch of props, different props. Sure. And let's talk a little bit about the mechanical props
Absolutely.
That they use. From the robots to these little explosive devices that you can literally stick on people, and the person blows up in almost a sadistic way.
The props and the weaponry, it was interesting how the technology was used, because why don't we look at Kruger.
Mm-hmm.
He had technological prowess, obviously, but one of the main things that he uses to kill people was a sword. He goes old school and he eviscerates people, or he used a sword.
Hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, hand-to-hand combat. That was his strength. The effectiveness and the ingenuity of using those, like that missile launcher he had, that thing was pretty cool when he took it out. It was like a big square bazooka that had four RPG missiles to take down spaceships of anything. So, yeah, the props were really cool, I thought, in the movie.
And also the camera device that they had that flying around, it kind of felt like Big Brother. Elysium had eyes on Earth.
Sure. Yeah, it reminded me of, I don't know, how anybody do Terminator the Ride? At all. They had those flying things, in that movie that had the eyes and you can see. And everything that was used to find Max and the imperativeness of getting Max, because he had all his information in his head and he didn't know what to do with it. Technology-wise, again, I think look at the cars, too.
Yeah. They were shuttles that they used.
Yeah, they were very Mad Max-ish. Very dirty. They're almost like the blockade runner in Star Wars, where it's like dirty, not as pristine. They were banged up, dinged up. Again, it just shows the difference between these are the robots in Elysium and this is Earth. The one scene that I really enjoyed was when Matt Damon or Max, he was talking to his parole officer, which wasn't even a robot. I mean, it was just it was a drive-thru.
Yeah.
That had a face with holes in the mouth. And like,
it was
just
graffitied all over too.
And he's talking to this robot. And that scene to me worked. I thought it was very funny. And I had no problems with the look. I think cinematography, editing were all on all the money that was put into the movie, which is around $100 million, showed on screen. For yeah. me. You as well?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I 100% agree. And again, that's why for me it is surprising that it's not a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But overall it did work. And, you know, I did like... you know, it's interesting to me, you bring a good point in terms of when are we going to get to Elysium?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I knew that we were going to get there. It would have been interesting. You know, I was kind of always concerned, okay, is he actually going to get to Elysium? I know he has to, and they're going to accomplish their mission. But, and as we're spending so much time on the mission of getting the information.
Sure.
I liked how it kind of came back, you know, and that was the key that Spider needed, and that's what's going to progress forward. Because I knew initially it was always going to be a very selfish reason for him to just go.
Sure.
You know, I was like, okay, if you know, especially with the way we built it up with, you know, nuns and things like that.
So, yeah.
You know, everyone has a purpose. And if your purpose is very selfish, it's not a very good right. message, is it?
Especially if you're going to heaven, which is what Elysium stands for. All right. Yeah. You're right.
And so, you know, so it made sense eventually, and I liked that it took that turn, and, you know, almost kind of what he's saying is that fate will choose your destiny for you.
But, I mean, again, the telegraphing for me, I mean, was there at any point, again, spoiler, everybody, Mac's character sacrifices himself. That means he dies for the good of humanity, let's say. You sort of knew. I mean,
yeah.
I figured that was going to happen. You know, the moment he met the sick girl, I was like, okay, these things, it was just telegraphed from a mile away. Like, he had a feeling that it wasn't going to end too well for Max, other than the fact that he was going to have the epiphany that he was meant for.
Here's for me, I was hoping they would work against that convention.
Yeah, me
because
too.
Because it is a convention. I mean, how many times do you see it? You know, the funniest one to me is the Omega Man.
I was thinking the Omega Man. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
So. Go ahead,
I was kind of thinking Armageddon, but as terrible a movie that was. But it shows that the protagonist is willing to sacrifice himself for the betterment of everyone. So the fact that, like, all the citizens can be legal and can have that same somewhat fairness as the Elysium cities, citizens.
But didn't you find it, you know, again, when we talk about technology, and they made it a point in the movie to talk about technology, you know, it would be great to be a real estate agent, I thought, in Elysium, because, hey, you can get this 20-bedroom mansion, 20-bedroom, 5.5 baths, and 2 metabeds come with this. Like, every place had a metabed, and there were so many metabeds. It's like, okay, again, like, you can't afford to send one of these metabeds down to a hospital. You can't do, like, it was one of those things, like, technology was there. But was it really?
But it shows the selfishness of the Elysium.
Yeah, but if they could make it, they know that they have them. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. Again, goes through all. Yeah. They had some technology down at Earth, but they knew these metabeds. You know, and again, who's making these decisions? Like, the President Patel seemed to have some semblance of sympathy, but I mean, are they running things from up there like gods? Which, you know, if you take it from the definition of Elysium, it could be that. Or, like, who's running things? Like, because at the end, who ends up making the decision to send the emergency medical evac things to Earth? It wasn't a president or anybody who said, let's do this. It was the computer that said, citizens, legal, send help now. And so does technology run things? Again, I was just trying to figure out all this stuff. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but
and it goes to show, because this movie does take place in the future, it shows that maybe humans kind of become technology in and of itself. Even Matt Damon's character, he has to have this biomechanic suit literally welded to him. And I like the fact that it didn't really take him over. Mm-hmm. Like, he still had part of his human side would still retain his humanity.
Right.
But the fact that he has to download information literally into his head, and even the CEOs of Elysium can download information.
Yep.
They're part computer. They're part technology. So it shows that maybe eventually those two lines of human and technology, they just bleed together.
Sure, absolutely. Read if you haven't, I would recommend read Neuromancer. I mean, we're geeks here, so maybe a lot of you have. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is William Gibson's first book, and it's exactly what you just said. It's about plugging in, getting – he invented the term internet. He coined that phrase and getting into the system. And, you know, I always find that, you know, the the meshing technology with humanity. Blade Runner had it. Star Trek did it a lot. And, you know, and again, I'll just bring it around as Star Trek. You know, back in the 60s, Star Trek second season had a episode called The Cloud Minders. And this episode, this one episode, was exactly about this. It was about these people who lived in the clouds. They lived in the heavens. They had these other people mining for them. They were definitely a lower class. And the lower class was rebelling because they had it really great up there. And down there, it wasn't so great. And they were dying. They were mining for this ore that kept these stratus, you know, these cloud minders, these people in the clouds, it kept them safe and happy and everything. It was really interesting. I was like, oh, this is an old Star Trek episode. Everything comes back to Star Trek. So, you know, yeah, I think, again, good movie. Like, it was good to the point where it looked great. You know, I just have a lot of story issues.
Yeah, like, the writing was underdeveloped and characters were underdeveloped. But visually, it kept me going.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was eye candy, really.
Yeah, I was never bored. No. And the people that I saw it with, they were like, no, it was a fun movie. And, you know, it's, for me, I think we talked about this before. Why are we more forgiving on certain movies than other movies? And we had this conversation where we were talking about Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
In Pacific Rim, you know, a lot of people brought up, oh, well, this is stereotypical. Oh, I've seen this character before. And, you know, but all in all, I had a fun time in the movie. And that's, for me, not the case with Elysium, because once I started pulling that thread, everything else, you know, I tended to be less forgiven in Elysium. It wasn't the fun science fiction movie. And you can have message movies. Science fiction should always be about humanity. I look at The Dark Knight Rises last year. Mm-hmm. That's a message movie. It was not meant to be an Occupy Wall Street, but it was about the have and have nots. But we still developed character. We still had great story. And that movie was 2 hours and 20 minutes.
It was.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
You
that's
know.
True. The thing why I can kind of forgive it is because there are all these social inequality undertones
sure.
to it. And why I forgive is because that does exist. It happens mm-hmm. every day in today's society. We have the upper class, which are like the CEOs and of Elysium, the committee, Jodie Foster, even Carlyle, who mm-hmm. and who works for Elysium, yeah. but he's on Earth, and he even says the line, "Don't breathe on me."
Don't breathe on me. It was a great,
which I thought
great
was
lie.
Interesting because it just shows that he hates all these Earth citizens that he doesn't even want to breathe the same air as them. So, and we have the upper class, and then we have the lower middle class, the professional workings, and then the lower class.
Lower class.
All the people on Earth working those part-time jobs or even unemployed.
Sure.
So, like, there is this caste system that's so true.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. Again,
do you think that, I mean,
it was global.
You know, in terms of Matt Damon, and we can talk about all the rest of the actors as well, but Matt Damon specifically, do you think he took that role because of the message? He's done, I mean, you know, he's done documentary work before. You know, speaking of Wall Street, he did do the voiceover work for, I think, Inside Man?
Yeah.
You know, and so, I think it appealed to his political views in terms of why he did it.
Oh, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I think for him, it was probably, again, I don't know him, so, you know, it's funny to talk about a gentleman I don't know, but I mean, if I had to think about taking the role, it was an opportunity to work with Neil Blomkamp, who made his bones with this movie that was a message movie that worked really well called District 9. The plot probably, that plotting probably, like, he said, wow, okay, this is an interesting science fiction story. I like the way Matt Damon chooses his projects. He can do a Bourne movie. He can do a serious movie. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a science fiction
movie.
He can
do controversial movies, such as Behind the Candelabra.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I like he has a wide variety of acting range. And I think the fact that he picked Elysium, just more power to him, because it just shows his talent as an actor.
Sure. And he doesn't thumb his nose up to genre type films. And at the same time, we can watch him viral video with Jimmy Kimmel all the time. So he's got a great sense of humor, and he's from Boston. So, you know, he's a good guy from Boston that made it good. So, you know, I'm a guy from Boston trying to make it good and trying to be a good guy. But I think to your point, I think the political overtones may have been something when he read the script that says, yeah, I'm on board with this. you know, again, without knowing him, I think the project just fascinated him. And I like that he doesn't shy away from genre films.
Yeah, and he even, Matt Damon even said in an interview himself, the interviewer asked him, if Elysium were a real place, he would probably be on it. And he acknowledged that he probably would. But he still doesn't see down upon others who wouldn't be in Elysium. So I just applaud him for thinking in it that way as well.
Did you ask yourself while watching the movie, how rich did you have to be on Elysium? Because I think it was like the 1%. Like, you know.
I mean, it was pretty small.
Yeah, it was pretty small.
And they never really, because Max always says, I have to buy a ticket. I have to buy a ticket. That's just buying the ticket. That's not buying all the houses and, like, actually living there, that lifestyle. And they never specifically said the certain amount of how much that ticket is.
No, I have to buy a ticket. It's like getting a ticket to that, you know, to the Virgin Virgin American or Virgin Atlantic space shot thing. You know, like, you need to be uber rich in order to go out into space is basically it. But
I think it's fair to say that Carlisle and Delacorte were billionaires.
I mean, they had to be. And again, like, Carlisle was interesting because he was in a position where, you know, his business that he even said that he grew might not be hitting its goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there was a fear, maybe there was a fear for him where he would get booted out of Elysium. Like, if you fall down in tax bracket, do you get kicked out? Like, are you not allowed to stay up there anymore? Because that was brought up in the movie that he's like, don't worry, this is a business that I built from the ground. I'm going to hit my quotas. And it didn't matter what was going on because, so Matt Damon, Max, he's working, you know, the door jams. So my first inclination would be just to shut the whole, just shut that down.
Yeah, turn it off.
Turn it off. But no, he just goes in there. But his boss says, fix it, go in there. Or I'll find somebody else who will.
Yeah, and you, you'll be fired.
And he doesn't, like, just take the, just shut it off for a second. Mm-hmm. Go in there, move the crate, and get back out. But, you know, again, we're talking about class structure where they seem to be slaves almost to Carlisle.
Mm-hmm. And they really are. And that Carlisle's position is to oversee this.
Right.
All these robots that are getting.
Yeah, he's the Pharaoh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but when you said that he might lose this business of his might fail, it shows that Delacorte promised him all these financial benefits that he'll have if he, you know, resets the whole system.
Right.
So it goes to show that Delacorte is, like, he has way more money than he does.
She has way more money. Yeah, she had to be, you know, yeah, again, I think everybody up there was uber rich. Uber rich. And I think it was definitely a one percentile thing. But
to the point where you can't even fathom how much money they had.
And somebody had to build that space station, too. And it was a constant reminder to those people who couldn't get up there that they're up there.
That they're up there.
and that sort of stuff.
Like, literally out of reach.
Yeah. Oh, completely. What, Phil, in that book that you saw, did you go back and open it after you saw the movie?
I mean, it's all the, you know, Marissa brought up that he drew a lot of the images.
Yeah.
So it was the artwork of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, I stopped myself. I kind of flipped through it just a little bit, but I stopped myself because I didn't, you know, a lot of the questions that we were asking, I felt before I saw the movie, you know, would be answered too much and I'd be going in with too much knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want that.
Let me ask you this. Did you like, what did you like better, this or District 9?
I would say District 9 because, honestly, it was a little bit of a smaller movie.
Mm-hmm.
And for this, I felt, you know, and I got it. For this, I felt this honestly could have been a longer movie or it could have been a franchise movie. You know, where we accomplished one, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where we hit, like, we hit certain beats.
Right.
You know, so at the end of this movie, we hit a certain beat, but the ultimate goal is to get everyone on Elysium.
Right.
Whatever that, you know what I mean? And so we could have kept that going.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that you mentioned we could get everyone on Elysium. The fix-all at the end wasn't to bring people to Elysium, but it was to send medbands down.
To them.
We don't necessarily want you up here,
but we're going to help you out.
We'll cure you,
And
we'll send a couple of medbands, and in 5 minutes you'll be cured of all your
things. I think that's where I kind of got upset at the end a little bit, because even though they're still considered – they're legal now, but is this social class the same? Are they still the lower class?
Yeah.
Are they really equal?
Yeah, it never really answered that. I don't think they're ever equal. Yeah. I mean, I didn't get that. It just, like, again, to me, was one of those things where it's such an immigration thing where, you know, if you got to sneak into some place, if you have to cross a border and you're in immigration, you have to sneak in and get a fake passport. And that was brought up in healthcare. Healthcare issues is like in Elysium. There is no healthcare issue. We got these beds. I can have cancer, do whatever. But here on
Earth. But you have to be a citizen. You have to be a citizen. Branded.
And they weren't even considered citizens down here on Earth. But again, was this just Tijuana Angeles? Was it the entire world? Does everybody get med beds to fill beds? Well, I never know.
What worked about Pacific Rim is they had a lot of use of TV news.
True.
You know, here, and I feel ultimately that's what that's how they got away with, okay, even if we're going to spend time in, you know, they spent a lot of time in Japan and a little bit in the United States.
Or Australia.
Yeah.
San Francisco.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been an easy way to kind of update everyone because, you know, I was wondering, how do these people get their news? Okay, so there's brand thing happened, but okay, three medical ships go down, they go to Los Angeles. You know, where do we stand with the world and how do they get their information? And which might speak to a bigger point of, you know, that they're, you know, not really educated, which Max's character wasn't. You know, it was Trey who was knew how to read, he didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
And I felt also the language thing was a little bit strange.
Which on Earth or
that they use
either
that
they or use
Spanish or
either or didn't you know it didn't define anything, you know, it was kind of I didn't understand the reasoning when they used it versus not using it.
Sure.
You know, and it just became why.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it goes back to having education because Delacour and Carlyle, they had education.
Truly.
Carlyle knew how to do coding, that's obviously education. And
sure.
Max is doing this menial type of a career job that
that he's lucky to have.
He's a blue collar,
very blue collar, and all of them because he has to fight to get a job every day.
Sure,
and to work. So there's even that separation between these citizens that they have wealth, they have Medicare, they have education, and Earth citizens don't.
No, they clearly didn't, and. You know, and again, it just goes to the have and have nots. And, you know, Matt Damon or Max, as you said, we open up in the movies in subtitles.
Yeah.
You know, the movies, it's in Spanish and it's in subtitles and it's a Spanish nun. And, like, again, you know, immigration for LA, clearly, they all cross the border. They all, it's you know, it's definitely all Latin American right there. It's all crossing the border. But, yeah, I mean, it was an interesting dichotomy, to say the least. And Delacourt was so prim, almost improper in what she wore and how she walked. And again, if we're talking performances. Fine performance, I thought, from Jodie Foster. I think if you're going to do an accent, what I noticed, I grew up with a mom who's from Greece, okay? And she has an accent. I grew up with that. That's all I heard. And the one thing, you know, I mean, she's gotten better with the English language, obviously, through years, and she went to school and everything. But the one thing is that when you're first starting, for when your English is a second language or a third language, you know, the words in English almost seem to be forced out. And that's the way Jodie Foster played that. And I thought that I thought she did a really good job, in the way that, you know, I mean, you knew she was, I wish the character was fleshed out, but I thought she did a really good job. You know, she's a class act. I think in the roles that she picks, I think, you know, it's nice to see her get back into science fiction, and I did. I had the fortune, I was in a fortunate position where my first job when I came to L.A. is I was a PA on Contact, the movie Contact.
Oh, okay.
I was a kid in a candy
store.
Also
with William Fichtner.
Also with William Fichtner, Jodie Foster, it was a Robert Zemeckis movie. I was a kid in a candy store, and I have my one Jodie Foster story that I have, which really, you know, just really puts her up above a lot of people is I worked for the costume department in the production office. And Jodie Foster came in to do a fitting. It was her first, you know, she was doing a fitting for all her costumes. I was briefly introduced to her. The conversation, if it was 5 minutes, it was, hey, Dimitri, or hey, Jodie, this is our production assistant. Jodie, this is Dimitri. Oh, hey, Jodie, how are you? Nice to meet you. Can I get you anything? No, I'm all good, whatever, and fine. And we talked, and that was it. Flash forward a couple of weeks later, I had to go to the production office, and I was at Culver Studios, and I'm walking in the parking lot going towards the office, and Jodie Foster was walking towards me. I wasn't going to, you know, I'm just the PA. I'm just going to the office. She walks by me. She just out of the, hey, Dimitri, how's it going? And I was like, is there another person named Dimitri around here? And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, she's talking to me. And she remembered my name. And I was like, oh, my head. I felt elated. I was like, that's wicked awesome. I said, hey, Jody, how are you? Are you done for the day? She's like, yeah, going home. I go, I'm not. I go, you have fun. I'll see you later. That's the kind of woman that she is. I always respected that in her. I actually got to be on set and watch her work. She's fantastic. And, you know, I give her big creds for everything that she's accomplished. And I've been a fan since Freaky Friday, watching the original Disney movie.
I have nothing against Jodie Foster. Yeah. I think she is a great actress overall. I think this her particular character of Delacorte,
sure.
I didn't feel for her. Mm-hmm. Therefore, no. I didn't really care for this character.
Right. I agree. And a villain... This should be some motivation for the villain. I agree with you. Yeah, I didn't. So you don't feel for
you
her.
You need to connect at least on some level. Even though you don't like the character, audience usually still connect to them in some way. I really had a disconnect with her. Maybe because she was so sociopathic.
Yeah, I think so. How about you, Phil? What did you feel, too?
In terms of her, I really wanted her to be the villain at the end.
Yeah.
You know, instead of Krager.
True.
But, you know... I thought she did a good job, and it worked out well. Again, all these different plot elements that at the beginning I was like, okay, why are we going here? Why are we going here?
Mm-hmm.
I like how they did tie together at the end. But I also do want to talk about the music.
Yeah,
yes,
sure.
Let's talk about this the music done by Ryan Amon, who's known for composing trailers for The Avengers, Watchmen, and whatnot. What did you think of the music? I thought the music was... It was nice instrumentally, but then it had a lot of different elements to the standard composed music.
Yeah, it almost, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the trailer thing. It almost felt in certain scenes that it was composed for a trailer. It sometimes for me, it was a little bit of a distraction to the action going on because it didn't seem, I don't know, there was something about it that to me, I was like, I'm not going to run out and buy the soundtrack. I'm a soundtrack guy. I love, there's a score, I buy the soundtrack, listen to it a lot. To me, at times, I felt that the music was sort of kind of a distraction. It seemed to be fit for that particular fight scene, whatever. And I guess, in a sense, like a trailer, when you've got a short burst going on. So that's how I sort of kind of felt for it.
And it's been said that he actually, the director, Neil, went up to him and asked him to compose this music without having seen the film yet. So Neil let him have this range of freedom with the music, and it's been told that for the score, he used like baboon calls, mosquitoes, like a lot of different sound effects that you wouldn't normally hear in a composed music score.
Which is fascinating.
But again, with those weird ambient sounds, it really reflects the atmosphere of Earth. Because of all the random things that are happening in the overcrowding and overpopulation of Earth. So I think it reflected it well in that way.
Yeah, what did you think, Phil?
I overall liked it. You know, I think it definitely kind of had an Inception. I think a little bit of homage with the heartbeats. I mean, here, I'll play this again for you guys as I talk. Just that coming in.
Very Inception-esque. Right there.
But I liked it, and I liked how, you know, they had those moments, and then they slowed it down to where there was nothing. It was just, you know, and they had great moments of hyper-reality.
Yeah.
You know, especially from Matt Damon's character when he's kind of looking about, and when they really go to his point of view on certain things, I thought those were really brilliant. You know, and especially so when... I think it's Spider's plane when it comes down. Or actually, no, it's not Spider's. It's when Matt Damon finally gets to Elysium.
Yeah.
You know, just everything quiets.
Quiets, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Until we hit that a White House.
Pretty much.
Pun intended unintended, you tell me.
The music. It's actually fun to listen to the soundtrack.
Do you have it?
I listened to it. I personally would not buy it, but I highly suggest to people to listen to it and just get that feel for what the music is. I wouldn't suggest people to fall asleep to it though. It's one of those fun epic kind of soundtracks.
Okay. Yeah. It was. Yeah. Again, it wasn't anything that I would run out to buy. you know, when you just played that song, God, yeah, it was very, very Inception-ish.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, for me, it was fine. It was, you know, it was there. Yeah. You know, I didn't love it, didn't hate it. So, yeah.
And so overall, this movie, I enjoyed it visually. It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this movie will still be relevant in the 140 years when it's actually year 2154 because of the current storylines that are relevant now? Do you think it'll last and still be relevant then?
That's a great question. I mean, is this a time capsule movie? Not entirely. I mean, it's definitely for today. Absolutely, it's relevant. I think if people look back at it, you know, if they want a thumbnail sketch of history, like just a quick something simple to understand about the haves and have-nots and immigration problems that were going on today, it could stand that test of time. You know, I think District 9 might be remembered.
I think more.
More.
I think personally.
You know, I would. You know, we had Prometheus come out. You know, recently.
Yeah.
However you wanted to define that term, but for me, recently. And, you know, where there was so much hype around that movie that even with the faults that many people had with that movie, I believe it'll kind of continue. Whereas this movie, you know, there are aspects of it that were good, but I don't, you know, I mean, are we on par to good, like money-wise, we're at $30.5 million.
Sure.
You know, this is Sunday, 2 days after its release. Is that... What does that show us?
Well, I think if you're reading certain things this morning, I think I believe some people's perceptions would be that it underperformed. I think they were hoping to do at least what District 9 did for when it opened up wide, and I think they wanted it to do 35 to 40. Now, in the long run, we'll see if it has legs, you know, see how it does this week. People seem to sort of like it. I think it got on CinemaScore, I believe it was a B.
Yeah, and IMDb, it was rating a 7.2, and Rotten Tomatoes, it was audience was 71%.
Yeah, and what was the Rotten Tomatoes score? Last 65. I checked, it was 64. Okay, 65. I thought it was 64, which is okay. You know, I mean, yeah. For a science fiction movie, 65 is okay. I think a lot of that is given to Neil Blomkamp. I mean, people were really looking forward to his next movie. I'm looking forward to his next movie. I mean, I think he is a fascinating visual director. And I'm wondering, though, I would like to see him not do a shantytown movie. I'd like to see him do, you know, he can stay in science fiction or maybe a flat-out action movie. I don't know. I'd be curious to see what they give him next.
Well, I think, you know, I think you have to kind of give him a script to do that's not his own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and go from there and, you know, make it his own through the visuals and things like that. You know, because I think directing actors and again, we've all already talked about the other technical aspect. He's great.
He is.
You know, but what was on the page, you know.
So overall, I think this movie was visually aesthetically pleasing.
Absolutely.
It was amazing how they executed it and whatnot. But I think because of the social inequalities and undertones, that kind of is sensitive with a lot of people.
Sure.
Why they might look down upon this movie or frown upon it. But overall, I did enjoy this movie. It was a nice summer popcorn movie.
Yeah, I just wish, like I said, I wish the message didn't overshadow. I wish it didn't go for that to sacrifice plot and character development. I felt that the performances were fine. Nobody lost me. Nobody made me groan. I was there. Braga. Alice Braga, she was in Predators, which I had completely forgotten. So she's in another science fiction movie, a sci-fi movie there. And you know, she was really good. I liked her. She was very sympathetic. And as a mother, I understood when she said, "My life is complicated." I got more of a sense of her character than I did of Jodie Foster's character, who
or any of the Elysium,
could have been, right.
Because we didn't get the storyline of any other Elysium citizens. They are sociopaths. We didn't care for them. They didn't care for the Earth citizens.
Yeah.
But I did like this movie.
Yeah.
And so please, everyone who's listening and watching us on YouTube, go to iTunes and rate and comment. Tell us your thoughts
on
this
movie. Yeah, tell us your thoughts on this movie. Like, I mean,
we
I think
read
it's
all
a,
the comments.
I think it's a divisive movie. I think people will either love or hate it. Phil, any last parting shots?
You know, overall, I did enjoy it. I didn't know much going into it. I saw the trailers and things like that. I really wish this could have started the Oscar kind of trend of movies. Really did. You know, especially since sci-fi doesn't always get to be looked at. And I thought it could. It's unfortunate that only every 10 years do we get, like, a Matrix Inception.
Yeah.
And you know what? I thought maybe we could have gotten one with this.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite there, and time will tell where it stands with people.
Yeah. Sure, and, absolutely.
And because I did overall enjoy this movie and the direction of Neil Blomkamp with this movie, I will watch District 9.
You should.
So
I mean,
I will definitely watch
definitely
that
now to catch that out. So no, make your own decision, folks. We'd love to hear your comments.
Yes, and where can we find you?
You know, I just set up a Gmail account specifically for this. it is Trekboy. That's T-R-E-K. B-O-Y 1701A at gmail.com. If you'd like to say, hey, like what you say, don't like what you say, love this movie, what are your thoughts on this? I'll write you back.
Excellent. And you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at SerafiniTV. And Phil, where can we find you?
Of course, here at AfterBuzz TV, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and all that fun stuff.
All right. Excellent. Thank you so much for
listening.
You next time.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.